Have you ever heard that men are shallow? Anyone ever heard that? Yeah, as men, we have that reputation. I remember early on in my marriage, one time Stephanie would ask me, you ladies ask this sometimes, she would ask me, what are you thinking? And sometimes I would tell her, nothing. And she would say, oh, you can't be thinking nothing. You have to, everyone thinks of something. You got to be thinking of something. No, I'm not. I'm nothing, okay? Just because you ladies have a neutral gear in your mind and you never use that, you know, we men, we use neutral sometimes. I mean, it's not in drive. It's not in reverse. It's just in neutral. Nothing. But we get that reputation of being shallow. I have some things I want to share with you this morning. Some of it is really true. Women have more depth and complexity, and science has proof of that. You know, we have chromosomes. Men are the product of an X and a Y chromosome, but our maleness is in the Y chromosome. However, the Y chromosome usually carries inactive genes, and so men's genetic instructions are found in one chromosome, the X. But women, on the other hand, have twice the amount of genetic instructions as men because they're the product of two X chromosomes. There's no wonder they're more complicated than we as men are. There's twice as much there, okay? So that's scientific. All right, Stanford University did a study, and they told us that women have a classier sense of humor than men. Now, we didn't really need Stanford to tell us that. We already knew that. But they researched, and they gave men and women humorous cartoons to look at while having their brains monitored with an MRI. Men showed a lot less activity in their brains than women. Men expected the cartoons to be funny, and they started laughing sooner without much thought. Women evaluated the cartoons with much more thought. Their brains showed that they experienced more delight with each cartoon. We're just more shallow, okay? We have a simple sense of humor. Now, women should not blame men for not listening. And here's why, okay? It's not our fault. There's a scientific explanation according to discovery.com. Women's voices have more frequencies than men. Did you know that? Men's voices have fewer frequencies, and so the human brain must work harder to analyze the frequencies and comprehend the meaning when a woman's talking. So we've always known it, we just didn't know why, but now you know why. All right, this morning I want to talk not about the shallow desires of men, I want to talk about deep desires of men. Turn to Judges chapter 4, verse 1. Judges chapter 4, verse 1. Men have deep desires to be more, to be greater, to be godly men as we should be. Judges, when we read in Judges, we're reading about the nation of Israel. After Moses has led the Israelites out of the desert into the promised land, during that time, the nation did not have kings, they had judges. God was their king, and the judges were leaders of the nation. And so, we're in Judges chapter 4. This is before the kings. And so this is before King Saul, King David, King Solomon. This is about 1200 BC. And Deborah was the judge at the time. Deborah was a judge. She was also a prophetess. And so in Judges 4:1, after Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king of Canaan who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera. Now remember that name, Sisera. He's the commander of the enemy nation that has taken over, and they're dominating Israel at this time, and he's the commander of the enemy, okay, who lived in Harosheth Haggoyim. Because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years, they cried out to the Lord for help. And so you have one judge that will die, a leader that will die, and then the nation becomes sinful. And then the nation, and then God hands them over to an enemy, and then they're oppressed, and then they cry out, and then God brings a judge to help rescue them again. And so in verse 4, we read about Deborah, a prophetess. She was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah. People would come and they would have their disputes decided by her. And in verse 6, she sends for Barak. Now, Barak was the leader of the Israelite army. She sends for him. And she says to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you." Now, if someone is speaking from God and they say, "God commands you what I'm about to say," this is a time to listen up, right? I mean, this is a time to write. I'm going to write this down. Whatever you're about to say is very important. So God commands him, "Go, take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun. Lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands." When God says, "I'm going to give the enemy into your hands," what happens? God gives the enemy into your hands. I mean, this is an amazing thing to me. God is saying, "You go, I'll take care of the rest." Amen. And look at what Barak says. In verse 8, Barak says, "If you go with me," he's talking to Deborah, "if you go with me, I will go, but if you don't go, I won't go." You remember when you were young and you wanted to do something, but you were afraid, and you were with a friend, and you thought, I want to, but no, I'm not going to do that. And your friend says, "Well, I'm not going to do it." And then one of you says, "Well, I'll do it if you do it." "All right, if you do it, I'll do it. All right, well, here we go." And so we have the courage to do it. Barak says, "No, not unless you go." He's a coward. Okay? He's too afraid. And so Deborah answers him, and she says, "Okay, I will go. But because you're being such a wimp," she actually says, "because of the way you're going about this, but because you're being such a wimp, the honor will not go to you, for the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman." Deborah says, "I'll go, but because you're cowardly about this, God will do what he's going to do. But he's going to hand this warrior, Sisera, the enemy commander, he'll hand him over to a woman." And so what happens is, they go, and God does what God promised he would do, and they win this battle, and they put to the sword all of that army, except Sisera, who escapes. Sisera goes to an ally area, and he goes to the tent, he flees on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, because they were friendly relations. And so here he is in this tent, and he comes, and she says, "Come on in, don't be afraid." He says, "I'm thirsty." She gives him milk to drink. He says, "Watch out, and if someone comes, tell them I'm not here." She says, "I got it." So and he goes in, and he's exhausted, and he falls asleep. I think he's snoring, okay? But he is fast asleep. And this woman, Jael, she goes and gets a hammer and a tent peg. And she goes in there where he is fast asleep. Ladies, I'm sorry. Men, stay with me. And she takes that tent peg and puts it on his temple and drives it into the ground. And she kills him. And there's celebration with the nation, see, because they've been oppressed by this enemy. And God has given them into their hands. Celebration, and Deborah, the leader, and Barak, the leader of the army, the coward, they sing this song. And in Judges chapter 5, the first 8 words of the song are, "When the princes in Israel take the lead." Women want their men to lead. Children want their fathers to lead. The church needs men to lead, doesn't it? All right, turn to Hosea, chapter 4, also chapter 4. Let's look at another text. Hosea chapter 4, verse 1. Now, this is after Judges, after the kings, the United Kingdom. You had Saul, David, Solomon. Then you had the divided kingdom, Israel to the north, Judah to the south. You have a number of years, and you have a lot of immorality. And the northern kingdom has become so immoral that God is going to hand them over to Assyria. But before that happens, God is, through the prophet Hosea, speaking about this judgment. And in verse 1, he says, "Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying, murder, stealing, and adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed." What are these five things here? Cursing, lying, murder, stealing, adultery. Are we guilty of those?
Many of people.
When I say guilty, do we live in a society where we see these?
Yes.
And is our society affecting the church? And do we know it? When God, and I'm not saying that we are to be sinless. The church never will be sinless, but we will be forgiven if we walk where God is. Let's read on, verse 6. "My people," here's this phrase we've heard so many times, "my people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge." Now God is speaking to the prophets here. The spiritual leaders. "Because you have rejected knowledge, I also reject you as my priests. Because you have ignored the law of your God, I also will ignore your children." Because you've ignored the law. When God says do something, we better listen. Right? When God says don't do this, we better listen. When God says don't cuss, don't get drunk, don't envy, don't have sex outside of marriage, don't gossip, don't lust, don't be rude, don't be immodest and be the cause of someone to sin, don't envy, don't be greedy, don't lie. God tells us these things because He loves us. But we will be fools if we ignore God. And so, verse 12, "They consult," this is still God speaking, "They consult a wooden idol and are answered by a stick of wood. A spirit of prostitution leads them astray. They are unfaithful to their God. They sacrifice on the mountaintops and burn offerings on the hills under oak, poplar, terebinth, where the shade is pleasant. Therefore, your daughters turn to prostitution, your daughters-in-law to adultery. I will not punish," notice that, "I will not punish your daughters when they turn to prostitution, nor your daughters-in-law when they commit adultery." Meaning the women. "I will not punish the women." That's odd, isn't it? I mean, we're following basic Bible flow here. When people sin, God is grieved by that. And when they continue in sin, God tries to reach them. And when they rebel against God, God brings judgment. And then hopefully they repent. Here God says, "I will not punish your women." Why? "Because the men themselves consort with harlots and sacrifice with shrine prostitutes." God was not most frustrated with the women, he says, because you men who should be leading them, you're not leading them. They weren't leading them because they were tangled up in sin. Now, deep desires of men. Men desire to be greater. I've mentioned before this boxer, Jack Dempsey. He was a champion boxer in the 20s. He was a heavyweight champion for 7 years. In 1950, the AP, the Associated Press, named him the greatest fighter of the past 50 years. He was a part of the first $1 million gate fight. And they asked his wife one time, a reporter asked his wife what she thought of being married to a boxer. And her answer was, I didn't marry a boxer. I married a champion. I think I know a lot of things. Let me just admit my sin, okay? I know a few things. Ladies, young ladies, listen to this. The way to a man's heart is not through, you've heard the phrase, way to a man's heart is through his stomach. The way to a man's heart is through respect and admiration. Every man has a deep desire within him to be more. Every man has a deep desire within him to be a champion, to be a hero, to be great. And I don't mean in a prideful way. I don't mean all the attention. I mean to be competent, to be admirable, to be capable, to lead. Why is it that women oftentimes are more spiritual in the kingdom? And I would argue, it may not be that women are more spiritual deep down. It may be that the spiritual depth of men has barriers that men can't get through, or that they haven't gotten through. But understand something. Men want to be champions to their children. Men want to be champions to their wives. It doesn't matter if they're young. It doesn't matter if they're old. It starts when they're a child. We have this desire to be heroes. And it continues into adulthood. And it's important what our families think of us. It's important what our wives think of us. But there are barriers. And one barrier is sin. And Hosea, God speaks about, and he says, the women, I'm not so concerned about the women's sin, not that God would ignore it, but he says, men, that's where I'm really troubled. You should have been leading them. Sin kept those men from leading in the way that they desired to do. And with Barak, his fear kept him from doing what he desired to do deep down. And I would argue that as men, we have it within us. But either sin or fear or both keep us from being what we want to be. Every man has greatness within them. And every man has deep desires to be greater. I want to finish by talking about one of our men. We've been here 14 years, and one of the men here in this congregation has always impressed me with his... I can see great depth within his spirit. And when he leads prayers, when I hear Joe Richardson leading a prayer, I hear a godly man in love with God praying. Okay? And I'm told, I've heard a few times that... you wouldn't believe the Joe now if you knew Joe before. Now we all have that story, don't we? If you would have seen me before God got his hands on me. Okay, we all have a before Christ. So I talked with Joe recently, and he was telling me his journey. Okay. He said there was a time in his life when things were very difficult. Life was not going good. Life was very challenging. And he thought, you know, if I was closer to God, maybe I wouldn't be going through all this. And so he decided to start reading his Bible, to start praying, and he did that. Reading his Bible regularly, giving time to God in prayer regularly. He said, you know, one of the things in my life that I knew wasn't right was my relationship with my son Jonathan. And I knew I wasn't being the godly father I should be. And so he prayed about that. And he prayed in particular that he would have the courage to apologize to Jonathan for the way he had been a father that wasn't good. And the courage to lead their relationship to being better. Now, you know, when Joe, when he told me that, when he said, you know, I prayed for the courage to apologize to my son, I get that. As a man, I get it. It's not easy, understand something, it is not easy for men to show weakness. It is against every part of our body to show weakness. And so he prayed, and Joe says, I felt like if I changed how I lived, and if I prayed to God more, that God would relieve things in my life. And so they did. And at that time, Joe said, you know, I was part of a small group here. And he said he was so thankful that he had a small group of people that he could share this burden with. And so he did. He shared what he was struggling with and asked them to pray. And the group prayed. And he said almost immediately, there was a huge change in his life. He did apologize to Jonathan. Their relationship did improve. Life improved. The very thing he was thinking that, you know, maybe life wouldn't be so hard if I were right with God. And it happened. And he says, I know God answered that prayer. Now, Joe wanted me to make sure you know he's not the perfect Christian. And he mentioned, you know, I'm close to God, and then I'm not as close. And I'm close to God. You know, we're all the same in that, aren't we? But he told me two things I thought were pretty good. Number one, God has to be first. And as men, I think I know we all struggle with that, but allow me to focus on with the men this morning. As men, we struggle putting God first. The second thing, Joe said, you know, I regret that I didn't teach my kids more about God. Because at that time, to me, job was first. I allowed it to be first. And I wish I would have taught my kids more about God. And I think that's important for us men who have children and young men who will have children. I think that's important for us to hear and think about. What I want to point out is that before Joe made the decision to go to God, pursue God, and pursue God answering his prayers, before that, Joe had the desire in him. See, I can relate to that. And I think, men, you can relate to it. We have the desire to be more. We have the desire to lead in some way, to be an example that our families or our church family, that people could look at and say, now that's a godly man. We want that. And I think as Joe was telling me all this, Jonathan's a deacon in this church. Jonathan is a great example. I look at Jonathan as a godly man. And I wonder what would have been different had Joe not gone from the desire and taken action and pursued getting things right in that home. What would be different? I want to share a quote. Thomas Jefferson once said, if you want something you've never had, you must be willing to do something you've never done. Men, we're having a men's retreat in 3 weeks. And I want you to deeply consider coming to our retreat. The theme is becoming greater. And we're going to work that weekend. We're going to take some time to consider, what do I really want to be? And what can I do to start changing and becoming the man I want to be that's even greater than the man I already am? In 3 weeks. And I know that we all have things. There are things that you can do that weekend that will be tempting I need to do this, I need to do that. If you have to work Friday and you can only come Saturday, or if you have to work Saturday and you can only come Friday, I just encourage you to really pray about this. Come join us. Take the step from the desire to be what we want to be, and take a step and take action. Pray about this, please. Ladies, pray about this. And I haven't intended to leave you out. I know, ladies, you have desires and you can relate. We all can relate to wanting to be more than we are. This morning we're going to sing a song of encouragement. And it's a time that if publicly you want to put something before your church family, we'd love to pray with you or help you. There may be one here this morning that needs to take the step of becoming a Christian, and we'd love to do that. If there's something you need, please come while we stand and sing.